The Gulf Injustice Podcast, the official podcast of Detained in Dubai with Brother Storm.
Welcome to the Gulf Injustice Podcast. I'm Rada Sterling, and tonight we have the honour of speaking with Zulfi Bukhari, former special assistant to ousted Prime Minister of Pakistan, Imran Khan, joining us now. So thank you, Mr. Bukhari, for joining us. You were special advisor to ousted Prime Minister Imran Khan. And what I'd like to get from you is a sense of what led to the events of essentially him being ousted by a vote of no confidence. And we'll talk about what's happened since then. But if you could just take me right back there so that people who don't know the story, you know, from the party's point of view, from Mr. Khan's point of view, we'd love to hear that from you.
Sure. I think, you know, to be quite conclusive about it is that, you know, there was a no vote confidence. We believe that mainly it was an ingrown conspiracy, which was, you use the word inspired by the United States. We generally feel that what happened was is that there was obviously Imran Khan and at the time the army chief of Pakistan were not seeing eye to eye on various aspects of running the country, and after that it was kind of downhill, and that led to the no vote of confidence in Pakistan for various reasons, you know, the cipher being one of them as well. And, you know, there was obviously a very demeaning language used by an American official, kind of urging the ambassador to convey that, you know, that he would prefer Imran Khan to be out of government.
And do you think that then, was, I mean, that, that
he
came...
was.
That came around a day or so after he visited Putin in Russia. Now, do you think that, I mean, I've read reports that Pakistan was taking a neutral stance, and, you know, many countries are taking a neutral stance on the Ukraine-Russia issue. Do you think that America has just tried its best, knowing that in Pakistan it would be potentially able to inspire the actions that took place later? I mean, clearly they thought, you know, this would work better for America if we can control who's in office in Pakistan.
I think it works. I think that all works well for America or any superpower. You know, if we try to be completely non-biased about it and non-emotional, me being from Imran Khan's party, any country would like to have the same sort of wavelength and the likes of them in other countries as well, so that there's no different opinion. Imran Khan did hold a different opinion, but you know, when I say that, I think he held a different opinion to other leaders of Pakistan. But if you look around the region, he doesn't really hold a different opinion, because Prime Minister Modi holds a sort of a neutral opinion, but he's allowed to flaunt his independent foreign policy, whereas we aren't, let alone flaunt one. We're apparently not even allowed to have one. So it's, so there's two different laws for two different countries. But more so, I think, you know, I am one that also thinks that this was more of an ingrown issue. And the reason I say that is that when the U.S. Or any country primarily gets intelligence, it gets it from our intel, our local intel, our local intelligence. And because the intelligence and Prime Minister Khan were, you know, the divide between them was just expanding, you know, when they would, if they would kind of ask our intel and things were good, they'd be like, no, it's all under control. He's doing the right thing. He knows, don't worry. But when the divide is so vast, then when they ask that, how is it going? Oh, he's terrible for the country. He's leading it towards, you know, God knows what. And he's anti-America and he's anti-West. And, you know, maybe we should think about not having someone like him. Then you start hearing those kind of, that kind of language being used. And then naturally, if I was America, I'd be like, hold on, he's anti-America. Hold on, he's anti-West. Mm-hmm. Let us, you know, put a stop to this. So I think, you know, you need to be fair on how intelligence is conveyed and thought of and so on and so forth. So I think that is the accumulative thing that's happened. But the main reason was is because he just wasn't seeing eye to eye with the army chief of the time when he was in power. And then that just led to numerous amount of controversies and eventually his downfall as prime minister, or the ousting by the no vote of confidence.
And how do you think the people of Pakistan felt about their elected leader being ousted in such a manner where they had no control over the vote, no control over the decision?
Well, I think if you look at how many people came out on the road that day, I remember the day after Prime Minister Khan was out of power, we were having a closed door meeting with a close-knit kitchen cabinet. And I said, look, you know, you're the most popular leader the country has probably ever seen. Where are the people? And we're kind of just going like this, you know, people just aren't coming out. We went home. Maybe 3-4 hours later, we just started getting cold that people are still taking to the streets. And I must say, it was a phenomenal turnout. And since then, it's, you know, he's just gone from strength to strength to strength. He's become more popular than he has ever has been in his 30-year-old career. Right now, Imran Khan is by far the most popular leader in the country and by far the most popular leader the country has ever seen. And the polls this time showed, albeit they were rigged later on and albeit they were changed and manipulated and the mandate was stolen. But it was evident across the board that Imran Khan was the most popular and the chosen leader, even in these February 8th elections.
And so he's still, even after everything that they have tried to do to him, he's still the most popular leader in Pakistan. I think that's been obvious and evident. And it looks to me like quite the military coup, essentially. But it's even worse than that, because since then, since he's been ousted, they've tried to abuse the justice system, essentially fabricate charges against him to prevent him from ever being able to hold office again. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, he has about 200 odd cases on him, all previous, made up, no legs to stand on sort of cases. We got bailed on even the Toshakhana case, which is the treasury about the watches, that he got bailed on yesterday. So as the cases are going in the higher courts, which we're very confident of, in a way, we kind of want them to sentence him in the lower courts, just so we can quickly appeal. Get to the appeal in the senior courts. And we know when it goes to the senior courts, there has to be some element of law and justice. And the cases are so baseless that they'll be thrown out like yesterday's one will, and so will the cipher and so on, as they get to the longer one. The problem is they're being delayed to get to the higher cases. But there's 200 odd cases. He had a murder case on him for a city that is 2 hours by flight away from him. And that got thrown out. So, I mean, it was unbelievable that a man has done it. But what has happened in the last few days is that six judges of the High Court have written an open letter, which is out, and they've all signed it, and they've said that there is too much involvement of the establishments, and the word they use is operatives. You should show that letter on your vlog. And they've said that we've been blackmailed, threatened, cameras have been placed in our bedrooms, and threats and all to manipulate judgments and to manipulate rulings and how a case should be run. And we're sick and tired of it. This is basically what they have said. And they've appealed to the Supreme Court to take action on this and this interference from operatives in the judicial system. This is massive. It's huge that this kind of, that six brave judges, I must give credit to them, that they've stood up after, you know, basically taking a battering, the justice system taking a massive battering for 2 years, have stood up and said enough is enough. Do air that letter. And we're hoping that the Chief Justice of Pakistan, the suo motu been taken now, but initially he made a commission with the Prime Minister and the Law Minister. I mean, everything they're saying that these guys are the benefiters of it. Why would you sit with the Prime Minister and Law Minister when they're the benefiters of the six judges of what they're saying? So now a suo motu has been taken, and we pray that a full bench is constructed and the hearings should be made public. You know, the hearing of the full bench on this case should be public, so people should know. But it's absolute evidence that this is what's been happening in the last 2 years when it comes to Imran Khan, his political party, his leaders, his wife, for his cases.
Yeah, so would you say, I mean, in the same way that in a sense we're seeing that kind of thing happen with Trump, where he loses at the lower courts and he appeals and, you know, ultimately wins quite a lot of the cases against him. And I see this increasing, what they call lawfare, misusing the justice system against political opponents for their benefit. Do you have faith in the Pakistan legal system that they will ultimately rule in favor of Mr. Khan?
We do have faith in the legal system. We have faith in the Supreme Court of Pakistan. We know things here can get very tricky, and but you know, ultimately, it's our country, and if we don't have faith in it, a party who has you know, bought the most amount of buy-in from overseas Pakistanis, has bought the most amount of buy-in from local Pakistanis, if we, you know, we can't lose faith in our own system, and so we know that once it gets, because they're so baseless, we know that once it gets to the top, there's no way they can deny the lawyers, our lawyers, our legal team, you know, it's justice, even if it's not in its entirety, but certainly not what's going on at the moment. So we have faith in what's happening. And there is a similarity with what's going on with President Trump in the United States, most likely. And, you know, I think at the moment, you're seeing a lot around the world that, you know, the powers to be are taking a bigger role in center stage role in domestic politics.
Definitely. And I understand that when Mr. Khan was held in detention, were there any attempts to force any confessions out of him or any human rights violations that you noted?
No. You know, to be fair, if I talk about Imran Khan, I don't think there's any human rights violations. Not that he has said, yes, in the first, when he was in Uttak, he was mistreated in terms of he's a former prime minister, he's a taxpayer, he was a member of parliament. So hence, you are allowed a certain category of prison where he was kept in a death cell, an 8x8 cell, which is solitary confinement. You know, he was given a small little, you know, mattress, you would say, not really a mattress, but a thin one on the floor. And when it rains, all the rain would come on it. Mm. And so he was treated poorly in that sense for what a former prime minister and a parliamentarian should be treated. But in terms of human rights abuse on him, no. But there are large amount of Pakistan Tehreek Insaf workers, leaders that have been abused. And you've seen many of them all of a sudden vanish, kidnapped, abducted, and then turn up on television and give statements that they're leaving Imran Khan and Imran Khan is a terrorist and so on and so forth. So why do you think they came up with these convictions? What, if you look at 8 days earlier, they're standing on top of a car saying, you know, long live Pakistan, long live Imran Khan, we're with you to the end. And then all of a sudden, they don't go into a police system. See, when you go into a police system, you're still guided by some laws. You're in a prison. There's a system and you have some form of rights. But when you're abducted, then your parents don't know where you are. Your family doesn't know where you are. Mm-hmm. And you're just missing. And when you're missing is when it all goes down. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you reappear eight days later on television saying, oh, you know, I've got it all wrong for the last 25 years of my life. Imran Khan is a terrible person. I've just realized 7 days ago and I want to leave his party. So we had this exodus of leaders in our party to happen. But because the party is so strong, Imran Khan is so popular, a whole new young leaders emerged from lawyers and from society.
That's interesting. Do you think that other party members were perhaps worried that the legal system or even the Interpol system would be weaponized against them in the same way? I mean, you were issued with an Interpol red notice at one point, which you've since had removed. But do you think other party members were worried about the potential targeting that they might experience from this new regime?
Well, they were not only worried, they faced it. I mean, I would say I'm the lucky one that I had left Pakistan maybe 10 days prior to 8 days prior to Imran Khan being arrested for some business, personal business in London and Dubai. And when I was coming back the day before that, Imran Khan got arrested for only 1 day and then he got released. So when I spoke to him, when he got released, he said, don't come back. And he made me advisor to his international media and relations and all. So I stayed back. But the way that our workers have been targeted, they've been their houses have been ransacked, they've been kidnapped, they've been beaten, they've been missing. If they're not found, and a lot of our leaders had gone underground, their brothers were arrested or thingy. My first cousin was thrown into prison for 2 months, who's not even in politics, and this happened to thousands of people. We had 13,000 people in prison at one stage, women, children, elderly. You know, we've got women in there who are our health ministers. You know, or she's been regarded as, you know, everyone has high regard for her. One of the biggest philanthropists in Punjab, an amazing cancer patient, our health minister. She's in prison still. You know, you've had people from all walks of life. Khadija Shah, a decorated businesswoman with a, you know, designer label, was in prison for ages. Others, you know, that are in there still. So, you know, and people were abused, their businesses closed down, their help or whoever, their staff in their homes were beaten and taken. I had eight people of mine thrown into prison. I had some of my guards, I had some of my PAs and others that were thrown into prison. My first cousin, like I said, and people have faced it far worse, and they still are. And people are still in hiding, and they're just slowly trying to take bails and come out. You know, every single main leadership of ours was in hiding. Every senior role, you know, you got your chairman Imran Khan in prison. You've got the vice chairman, our foreign, you know, two times, three times foreign minister, one of the most distinguished human beings in Pakistan. No one can lay a finger on him on any form of corruption or anything of the sort. He's in prison at the moment. We've got our president of the party, you know, two, three times chief minister, an elderly man, slightly physically on the weaker side, you know, because he's much older, in prison. We've got our Punjab president. She's, like I said, she's in prison. So, and all of our other senior leadership in hiding. So, you know, it's just been unbelievable of what we've gone through, yet we stuck through it, yet we fought an election, yet we won the election. And then it was, the mandate was unfortunately stolen from us in its entirety.
Do you think that there's any chance that this will be reversed in the future?
I think now you're seeing a lot of people raise their voice. Like these six judges, I think, have definitely put a ray of hope into a lot of people. And I think it's a drop in the ocean. You're going to see that, you know, this, well, you know, this is the tip of the iceberg. I think you're going to see now a lot of people follow suit, because you can't carry on living in this kind of society where, you know, it's just injustice is everywhere. People, you sit around in any coffee shop, any restaurant, any gathering, people are talking about Imran Khan. They're saying whatever is happening is terrible. So this, you know, it doesn't, what an election is supposed to do is bring political stability. And this election has failed to bring that political stability. So you spent billions of rupees, and yet you've achieved nothing from where you were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So something will have to give at some point. And I think that's what's starting to happen. You know, things are becoming, I mean, they had the Interpol on me was on a terrorism charge, that I'm a terrorist. Mm-hmm. And I have letters from the Interpol saying that we reject Pakistan's claim on what's been posted in a certificate of free
because
traveling
it was,
and all of that.
Because it was political persecution, essentially. And that
absolutely.
Kind of persecution Interpol won't accept.
Yeah, absolutely. So so it's evident. And I think now things are starting to turn. And what the government is facing is a problem that they can't go out in public. They can't travel the world and call Pakistanis all over, wherever the prime minister or foreign minister or anyone goes. People have had enough. But what they're failing to do is that they're taking the country back decades. You know, remittances are dropping. Your exchange rate is going through the roof. Your imports have dropped. Your exports have dropped. You know, all these things. No one's investing locally into businesses. No one's sending money from abroad into real estate or businesses. So it's very hard to gain this confidence back. And it's not going to happen while Imran Khan is being prosecuted in prison.
There's extreme instability. It's affecting the citizens at the ground level, their income, their ability to live a normal life. But not only that, of course, when you round up political opponents to that extent and their families and friends and whomever else you deem you can arrest or you can, you know, fabricate a charge against, ultimately that's going to affect everyone in the country at some point, because the world is small. Pakistan, you know, might have, you know, more than 200 million people, but everyone knows someone who's been affected by this in a drastic way. And I think that, you know, having your vote taken away from you and having, you know, the country sent back three decades is going to create that sort of animosity towards the current administration. And until this has been addressed and people are confident that this isn't going to happen again, that every time we elect someone or we choose who we want to govern us, you know, we can't have the military or any other person or group coming in and taking that away from the people.
Yeah, you know, well said, absolutely. The fact is that people are living in fear right now. You know, someone along the line, let it not be them, then their cousin or their family members or friends have been affected by what's happened in the last 2 years, in particular the last 6 to 8 months. And reality is that, you know, Imran Khan is also, you know, he's raised the most amount of money for Shaukat Khanam and for Namal University. So everyone has donated to him at some point or the other. And people are living in fear that I hope my donation wasn't too big, because if it flags up, they might catch me as well. Businessmen who just have invested in the country are going in and out, and they're like, oh gosh, I have a picture with Imran Khan. His name is not being allowed to be taken on TV. Our names are not, where I'm not allowed on many channels, and nor is a lot of other leadership either. So, you know, this is what we're living in. Imagine, you're not allowed to take Imran Khan's name. You're not allowed to show his picture on any news channel. I mean,
because essentially you'd be supporting a terrorist group.
In 2024, I mean, you don't, Bin Laden's picture is allowed.
Yes.
you know, if you talk about Bin Laden, his picture is allowed. So go figure the logic and the strategy that's been used in the last 18 months. I mean, it's been terrible, right? At the end of the day, whoever was assigned to rig these February 8th elections, I mean, they've done a terrible job at it, right? Because they've done it. I'm not saying that any election in Pakistan has always been absolutely free and fair, but there's been an element of contentness in the public, in the people, in the candidates, and in the voters. The problem with this election is that there's no element of contentness. And the problem with this election is that the way it was rigged was so abrupt and uncouth and ruthless that it was so obvious. So whoever was given this tasking, you know, should be sacked, because they did a terrible job. I mean, they should have outsourced it if they couldn't do it. You know, they should have got someone in who rigged elections better in another country and said, come and do it in ours, because we did a terrible job of it in this election in particular. So whoever was in charge should really be sacked. I mean, they did a horrible job and they just made matters worse for themselves.
So I assume that most people in Pakistan, a large percentage anyway, would not have any faith whatsoever right now in the electoral system, in the current administration, and this might take a long time. They might not feel comfortable that their vote will ever count again. You know, something has to be done. What do you think has to be done? I mean, obviously you've said that, you know, you need to get it to the High Court. You need to get rulings in your favor that will expose things. Under the current regime, there is extreme censorship that you've just mentioned. So do you think that even if you get these rulings, it's going to really get out to the people? Is there that sort of drive that people will look elsewhere for this information? How are you going to get the message?
Well, look, you have a large number of, we have a, you know, very youthful population of, you know, majority of above 60 to 65%. And a lot of voters this time were first time voters, you know, they were 14 years old last time or now 18 and they voted for the first time probably. This is going to scar them for time to come in their first election. What was the outcome after their vote? Do you think they're going to bother in the next election saying, look, we know what's going to happen. It's obvious who's coming in as prime minister and our vote is not going to matter. So it's going to scar them for life of what's happening later on. Having said that, I mean, you know, like Imran Khan has always taught us to be on the positive side and you can always overturn any odds, and that's how he thrives in adversity. I believe that, you know, it's never too late. You know, I think the powers to be need to reconsider the strategy. The strategy so far has go in, demolish, abuse, smash, and everything will be okay. It didn't work. You know, we're 2 years down the road. The man he wanted to basically kick out of politics is more popular than his entire career. He's a monster sitting in prison right now, you know, isolated from the world, but is actually running the country. You know, if you really think about it, every single thing is, everyone waits for what is Imran Khan going to comment on that? What is Imran Khan going to say on that? In a way, you've just created a much bigger monster, a much bigger politician, the biggest leader you have. So the strategy hasn't worked. What should be done now? What should be done is, if I think completely again, non-biased, there has to be inclusiveness. you know, I'm not one ever to go for any form of agitation. We need to find a way. The establishment is a reality in our country, but in the last 4 to 5 years, Imran Khan has also become a reality in the country. And the both realities do have to sit on the table and find a way forward. Our, you know, our army has maybe the highest, I'm not sure of the percentage, but I'm sure it's above 35-40% of the private sector of the entire country. They're the biggest landowners and holders in the entire country. You know, you've got fertilizer companies, you've got cereals, you've got, you know, every grocery stores, you've got cement, you got, you name it, they're involved in. So it's not something that's going to change overnight, and nor should it. So what you need to do is that find that balance again. And I think it's important for the institution to gain that respect and love from the people, because I think that's the utmost important thing that the country always requires, is for people to absolutely love and adore the institution like they have done for decades. You don't want that to fall at any point. And at the same time, democracy is the path that Pakistan wants to go down. And there has to be, if not absolute, there has to be contentness in people's minds and feeling and the atmosphere in Pakistan. And that can't be done by the biggest democratic party with their backs against the wall. You know, the biggest, the largest, the most entrenched, the most, the largest grassroots level political party has to be brought to the table. And inevitably, what Pakistan needs moving forward is consistency. If you look around us, from Bangladesh to India to Malaysia had its time, and you know, Singapore, Turkey, they all had consistency, or still do. Many, Bangladesh and India still do with the same leader, Turkey. And then in the GCC, you got monarchy, so there's consistency. You need consistency. Pakistan's not going to change with a five-year framework of any prime minister coming in, let it be us or let it be them. It's going to be, you'll need some form of consistency. And that's the only way to take Pakistan back. And I will say that whatever has been done in the last 24 months has at least taken Pakistan another 15 years back from where it was. And it's going to be very hard to leapfrog forward again.
But with the positivity of Mr. Khan, I'd like to hope that that can be done, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
I think the world moves a little bit faster now, as we've seen when it goes negative. But I think you can overcome that, and I hope you do. And those who are listening to this, is there anything that they can do to help? Is it good enough that they, you know, start talking about it publicly and stop being afraid? Is there any advice that you'd give to people who do support Mr. Khan?
Absolutely. I mean, I think in particular, the international community who support Mr. Khan, I think he was a brand name, you know, from his cricketing days prior, but whoever has ever had any kind of encounter with him or knows about him knows that he's a man of integrity. You know, there's not one blemish on him in any monetary, you know, corruption case, and everyone knows that everything against him is all made up and fake. So I think people that know this man's integrity knows this man's you know, how patriotic he is towards his country, how he has been and represented his country on many fronts through his lifetime, you know, should speak up. And at the end of the day, it's not about being pro Imran Khan. We can have a thousand flaws in our governance. We can have done a lot of things wrong. I'll be the first to put our hands up on the way, places where we had did go wrong and we need to improve. And this is a time for self-reflection in a way. But at the end of the day, we are a country of 250 million people. You need to respect our vote. You need to let the people choose who they want as their leader. And if he messes up, don't vote for him again. If you don't like Imran Khan buying his watches from the treasury legally and selling them off legally, don't vote for him. You can't put him in solitary confinement and imprisonment for his life on those basis. You just don't vote for him. I mean, it's bizarre. Instead of not voting for something that that you don't like about him, you throw him in prison and throw 200 cases on him.
Well, so that's what you do when you know, when you think that you're going to lose at an election. You have to, the only other way is to weaponize the justice system against them, to try sneaky tricks and dirty tricks, and, you know, put half of his staff on Interpol and intimidate and frighten the population. I think that's the only way you achieve power if you're not going to win at an election.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's exactly what's happened. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, we, the people of Pakistan, you know, all we want from the international community is for you to respect our mandate. Yes. And all we want is that we want to see democracy, which the West always empowers and talks about all the time. Why is it that a country of 250 million people is being ignored? You know, we're a very large democracy. We're a very young, youthful population. I mean, that's an asset, and it's also explosive as well. And, you know, we want to make sure that the government that comes in is mandated by the people, has the people's respect and vote, so they can take tough decisions to improve the economic, the security situation of our country. You cannot take tough decisions when you're stepping on eggshells because you know the public hates you. But when you go to the public because you got their mandate in a legitimate way, you can say, you voted for me. Now, trust me, I know the next 24 months are going to be very tough. I'm going to take severe decisions economically, but bear with me. I'm your leader. I'm the guy you voted for. And people will trust that. But when they hate you, then you'll take tough decisions maybe for a year, and then you'll go into a four-year election mode where you'll try to make decisions just to make sure you can try to find a way to win the next election. That's why it doesn't work. In Pakistan, you might have a five-year term if it ever fulfills itself. But after the third year, you're in election mode anyways. So you're not really doing any real work and, you know, actual making any, you know, disruptive policies, which Pakistan so desperately needs.
And how do you think the international community could help in a way, or any allied nations? What's been the response from allied nations to Pakistan?
I think overall, the response, to be very fair but respectfully, has been very poor. It feels like Pakistan is, in a way, irrelevant. And whoever our establishment and military decides, there's only one institution in the country, albeit it may be true, but the only thing we care about is what the army says. And if they said it's all good, then it's all good. And I think that's unfair for the people of Pakistan. Mm. And I think many countries who the Pakistani people love and adore and have such great relationships with, brotherly relationships with, in the Western countries, and we all look up to the United States for being, you know, for what it's achieved of being a superpower, you know, United Kingdom always fighting for various rights. Mm. Unfortunately, the response has been very weak. David Cameron, however, did give a good response when he first came in as foreign secretary. You know, when our elections happened, he gave a good statement. We would hope it would have been followed through a bit more and seen the violations that have happened in Pakistan. I mean, all we are asking for is just come and see for the proof for yourself. Just ask 20 odd seats or constituencies and pick up their Form 45s and see how this, you know, this, it's not even manipulated, it's been robbed. I mean, Nawaz Sharif lost his seat to our ex-health minister in prison. And the TV was showing 70% polling done, and she was 50,000 plus votes ahead. And calculations showed that even if he had won every single vote after for the 30%, he still couldn't catch up.
Right.
And she lost nearly by 100,000 votes the next morning. Mm. In fact, it took like maybe 48 hours to get that all changed and everything. And he ended up winning by like 80, 90,000 votes. Wow. And she was leading on television, on all channels, 70% of the polling done by 50,000 votes. I mean, it's bizarre. So all we're saying is that we would love for them to open this. Just doesn't matter about Imran Khan. Doesn't matter about us. Doesn't matter about anyone else. All we're saying is that they should look into that. Was this election democratic or not? Was it fair or not? That's all we ask for anyone in any circle, any influential circle, any political stage, any political platform, seat, or country. That's all we ask for, is to look into our election and see that the people of Pakistan, 250 million of them, got robbed.
Well said. And when is the next most important part of the upcoming court hearings? When do you think we'll hear back on some important judgments for Mr. Khan?
Well, we have Eid coming now, so things will slow down. But I think just after Eid, the Toshakhana one, and I think the Cypher one in this kangaroo court that is inside the prison, because you know, basically this fear that no television should ever capture Imran Khan's, you know, appearance, even because that brings in a lot of inspiration into the public. So they created a court within a room inside the prison where no international media is allowed, so you wouldn't be allowed. Although the court has ordered that press should be allowed inside. Only a handful of local press is allowed inside.
Right.
No international media allowed to go in. No general press is allowed to go in if they're not going to sing the song that they once sung. And so the Cypher case, I think, will come to an end soon. And then obviously, we'll, whatever the outcome is, we'll end up appealing it.
Okay, so you're expecting a negative result at the next one and then expecting to take it to the higher courts?
From the way things are going, the way that the Cypher case has been run against Prime Minister Khan and our former Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi, you know, we're not looking that this court's going to give any form of justice. They're not even taking any real statements from Imran Khan's side or letting many times. They're not even allowing his lawyers to speak. So, you know, we know which way it's going, but we have hope in the higher courts.
Excellent. And how often are you speaking to Mr. Khan?
I haven't been allowed to speak to him. He's not allowed the telephone, but through lawyers and family, get to speak.
Okay.
Yeah. And party leaders.
So we'll check in with you shortly and see if there's any updates coming soon. And we'll revisit this on a regular basis. I think it's an important issue for the people of Pakistan. But also, I think, you know, as a precedent as well, when you see a country in this sort of turmoil and the people that it's affecting, and, you know, I do believe that the international community, that allies in particular, should care enough about this to be, you know, promoting within Pakistan, to be encouraging them to restore faith in the people so the country's not in turmoil. I think we all have an onus to our neighbours to try to inspire that peace and stability. And I think it's hypocritical to criticize certain countries and then totally ignore the situation that's happening in Pakistan. I think it's really important that the international community talk about it. And I'm sure there's many Pakistani nationals outside who are also following, you know, what you say in particular, and wondering on, you know, how they can help, what they can do. I'm sure it's going to be the topic of discussion for years to come. And I really hope that you can get justice and that this can be overturned and faith restored. But it was just delightful to talk to you, and I will check in with you in another couple of weeks and let me know how the hearings go. I'd love to know.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Gulf in Justice podcast.